This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
New York City has just put the brakes on the Lyft Ubers of this world. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. U.S.-Japan trade talks are set to open today in Washington, the first trade meeting involving just these two countries since President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the broader Trans-Pacific Partnership last year. On the agenda, what could become a general agreement with Japan, plus the threatened increase in U.S. tariffs on Japanese cars and trucks. Marketplace's Renata Sego has more.
Sure. President Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe look like pals. They've reportedly spoken more than 20 times over the phone. They've shared burgers and golf. But if we're talking U.S.-Japan trade relations, it's more
suspense and tension.
Maria Solis runs the Center for East Asia Policy Studies at Brookings. The U.S. and Japan trade $200 billion in goods and services each year. Last year, Japan sent about 20% of its exports to the U.S. Cars topped that list. Solis says if the U.S. raises tariffs on auto exports, it would hurt.
The stakes are extremely high. The auto industry is very important to the Japanese economy.
Trump's push for a bilateral agreement is another sore spot, says Jeffrey Schott, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says it could require Japan
to make many more commitments, particularly in the agricultural area, but also on manufacturers.
Japan's been closely watching the maybe trade wars the U.S. has launched with both China and the EU, looking to avoid its own. I'm Renata Sego for Marketplace.
We're watching Turkey's spiking inflation and interest rates and currency troubles, with the Turkish lira down again today at 5.39 to the dollar. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker is watching this. Hi there.
Good morning, David.
What are some of the forces that have brought us to this point in Turkey?
Inflation is very high. 16% is the most recent figure. The central bank, in those circumstances when the currency is weak and when inflation is high, you would normally expect them to be raising interest rates quite aggressively. Well, they have done a fair bit, but the markets think they need to go further. And they are really quite worried about what they see as the malign influence from the president, President Erdogan, who has described himself as an enemy of interest rates.
Now, when a currency drops, of course it makes imports to a country like Turkey more expensive. But businesses also struggle in a particular way.
In the case of Turkey, there's an awful lot of businesses, including a lot of banks, who have borrowed money in foreign currency. And so when the national currency loses value, those loans become more expensive to repay. This was the kind of dynamic that was involved, particularly in the Asian financial crisis back in the late 1990s. A lot of banks, a lot of property developers got into serious difficulty for precisely this kind of reason.
All right. BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Let me check the market screens here. The 100-share index in London is down 0.7%. The Hang Seng index in Hong Kong closed up 0.9%. The Dow future isn't doing very much. S&P and Nasdaq futures are up 0.1%. The U.S. 10-year Treasury yield is down at 2.96%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The New York City Council has banned new permits for Uber and Lyft-style cars in New York City for a year. It's the first city to do this at a time that these Silicon Valley disruptors are seen to be disrupting traffic and disrupting the lives of traditional yellow taxi and limo drivers. The City Council has also cleared the way to require the Lyft Ubers of the world to top up drivers' salaries if they don't meet minimum wage. Ryan Felton is a senior reporter at Jalopnik, the online publication covering transportation. Good morning.
Morning.
There have been studies coming out on many sides of this issue. What's your sense? Is there clarity now on whether the Ubers and Lyfts of the world make congestion in cities worse?
It's kind of a tricky question because I think people are right to say that there's a ton of different elements at play, but New York City's seen tens of thousands of more drivers working for these services in the last several years, and you add tens of thousands of cars to the road, that's going to create some level of congestion. You know, in Manhattan in particular, seen in that same time frame, for example, like its average time, average driving speed has gone down a few miles per hour, which, you know, already makes slow moving traffic even more of a terrible experience for a lot of people.
Because in some cities, maybe outside New York City, Lyft and Uber might replace a person's private car. So net, there could be fewer cars. But if it's competing against buses or trains, as it often does in New York, you get this addition to congestion.
Right. I know there's been another recent study in Boston, and I know that found that it's been more congestion as a result. And I know San Francisco's also been scrutinizing this really hard. But you're right. In other cities, it could serve as just a vehicle that's being replaced.
What do we know about the economic conditions for people who drive for Lyft and Uber, et cetera?
What caused a lot of the recent criticism and backlash in New York City in particular has been a string of suicides involving drivers who had very intense emotional experiences trying to grapple with serious amounts of debt that they had taken on to work full time as taxi drivers or black car drivers. You know, over time, within months, you saw that there was more and more people speaking out and more people dying. And that's, you know, what I think has really kind of brought the city to the point where it was considering a vote to cap cars for a year.
Now, Uber and Lyft, et cetera, would point out that it provides jobs to drivers.
There are people who drive for Uber and Lyft full time, and it is a way for them to pay bills if they're needing work in between jobs. The points that Uber and Lyft make, they make sense, but clearly the status quo isn't working out for everyone.
Ryan Felton is a senior reporter for Jalopnik, which covers all things automotive and transportation. Ryan, thank you.
Thank you.
The app-based car services say New York's move is going to make life harder for people who need rides. The one-year ban on new permits does not apply to wheelchair-accessible vehicles. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. This is from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.